Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the New Books Network. I'm your host, Steven Siegel, and I'm really happy today to have as my guest, Jose Vergara, who is going to be talking about his new book, All Future Plunges to the Past, James Joyce in Russian Literature, just out with Cornell University Press 2021. Jose, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So we're here, and a little bit about Dr. Vergara. He is an assistant professor of Russian at Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania. He specializes in the prose of the long 19th century with an emphasis on experimental works. This is his first book, and in it, he examines Russian writers' reception of James Joyce's fiction. In the book, he illuminates how these writers have used Joyce's ideas as a critical lens to shape, prod, and constantly redefine their own place in literature and literary history. He's published on authors including Vladimir Nabokov, Mikhail Shishkin, and Sasha Sokolov, among others, in a variety of journals. And his writing and interviews can also be found in the Los Angeles Review of Books, Asymptote, Words Without Borders, and Music and Literature, and we'll talk about his current project, which I think is really fascinating, toward the end. So, Jose, I just want to start with a question that I ask all of my authors. What was your motivation, and how did you get interested in this topic?
Yeah, of course, it's a question I've thought a lot about, and I think it kind of speaks to my convoluted history with Joyce. I can kind of see, looking back, different moments that led up to this topic and then, you know, culminating in this book. But I first tried to read Joyce, Ulysses in particular, in high school on my own. And I kind of stumbled once I got to the part where Leopold Bloom's cat starts talking. It just felt a little too much at the moment. And I think I had, you know, other things on my mind and other writers to read. But I was also always very curious in Joyce. And then in college, when I had some extra time in my schedule, I took created an independent study with one of my professors, Tim Langan, in which we read Andrei Bielik's Petersburg, Flann O'Brien's At Swim Two Birds, and Ulysses. And there it kind of finally clicked, and I kind of understood it and understood that it was fun to read Joyce, in particular with other people. It's a kind of communal experience. So anyway, I had this, you know, fascination with Joyce along the way when I was also studying Russian literature and Russian in general. And then it came time to pick a dissertation topic in grad school. And at that point I was taking a seminar in the English department, again, because of my kind of side interest in Joyce, on Joyce, Beckett, and modernity. And when we started reading Ulysses in that class, I noticed these connections to Yuri Ilyich's novel Envy, just something I hadn't considered before, but it seemed really striking how the novels open with these bathroom scenes and these different parallels between the two works. So I started digging into it further, and I kind of discovered that Aside from some individual studies, Neil Cornwell's really excellent James Joyce and the Russians, which looks at the critical reception of Joyce in the Soviet Union and immigrant communities. And then some studies of or accounts of the translation history. Aside from all that, there wasn't much on the literary reception, kind of cultural reception of Joyce in Russian literature. And it struck me as a perfect union of these interests of mine, Russian literature and Joyce. And from there, it was a matter of picking authors and picking an approach and kind of tracing this the story, the development of this story in Russian literature. And what I've, the line I've been using recently is that at the end of Ulysses, Joyce has this postscript where he includes the cities where he wrote the book and the dates, 1914 to 1921. And in my case, I wrote this book between 2014 and 2021, or the publication of 2021. So there's this nice symmetry, this nice parallel, something, unexpected.
Yeah, it's you're right at the centennial, and I think maybe it sounds like the perfect moment to talk about the history of modernism and its reception and this, the ideal of the self-made artist as you lay it out. With all of these different Russian and Soviet writers and even, say, post-Soviet and post-modern writers. So let me ask this question. Why these five writers? Who are they for our listening audience? What did they write, and how do you see them creatively engaging with James Joyce and his body of work?
Sure. So the five authors are Yuri Alyesha, Vladimir Nabokov, probably the best known among them, Andrei Bitov, Sasha Sokolov, and Mikhail Shishkin. The question why I selected them, I think for a number of reasons. I really wanted to have a representative sampling in these case studies, and I wanted to highlight the different ways Joyce has been received and understood and kind of written against or written with by these different Russian authors. So Alyesha was publishing in the 20s and the 30s, and then kind of his production rate, sort of trailed off. So he represents a really early reception of Joyce, and that was important to me to show how writers were responding to him quite early. Then Nabokov, again, as many listeners probably know, he's a special case in that his English was, just as excellent as his Russian. So he could understand Joyce in ways that many other authors couldn't, and could easily access him with the full English translation much more easily, in emigration. And for me, he was important because of the kind of range of responses to Joyce. So in chapter two, I look at both his final Russian novel as a kind of translation or creative mistranslation of Ulysses. But then also at the end, bring in his second English language novel, Ben Sinister, where he kind of continues this polemic or this dialogue with Joyce. So there's kind of more material to work with there as well. And then afterward, between chapters two and three in the book, there's a kind of gap with where, in the Soviet Union, at least, there's a, the clampdown on modernism and writers like Joyce, where you just don't speak about him publicly. Even if, as I know that they're still reading and
all the attacks, right? I mean, the early to mid 1930s, especially, and with the turn right to socialist realism and how he disappeared from the public sphere, right? Because he's actually gone from, say, 1932 to 1955, if I remember correctly, right? Or somewhere around there.
Yeah, approximately. There were actually still some partial translation of Ulysses between 1935 and 36, 37. They managed to publish about 10 chapters or episodes from Ulysses, a version of Dubliners in 1937 as well. But yeah, from then on, very, very few commentaries or anything about him. He got a obituary published when he died, but not much in certainly the 40s and 50s. And then we come back out of that after Stalin's death, and you know, a few more years after that as well.
So, Jose, let me ask you, if I may, just a general factual and historical question about the translators into Russian or into Soviet Russian through the lens of translation studies. So how did your writers, the initial ones anyway, like Yuri Alyosha, become acquainted with James Joyce and his body of work? Could you give us some idea of how that came to be from the 20s onward?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the first kind of curiosities and moments in Joyce in Russia was an article published by Yevgeny Zamyatin, the author of We, in the early 20s in his journal, his literary journal. And in there, he kind of describes Ulysses, the plot, some of the innovations and the kind of candidness with which Joyce speaks about sexuality and kind of everyday life. And in the scholarship, it's a little bit unclear to people whether or not he actually read Ulysses or all of Ulysses, but nonetheless, he was one of the first popularizers or first critics to speak about Joyce in Russia. And certainly for writers like Alyosha and some of the other Russian modernists who really appreciated Zamyatin, this would be a key moment. But as far as the translations go, one of the first translations of Ulysses that came to be was in Russia in 1925. There were some fragments from Ulysses. It's even fragments of episodes of the novel, so not a full episode by any means.
Yeah,
but things from the beginning of the novel, the middle, and the end, even the Molly's soliloquy at the end.
Yeah, right.
So you get a full range and full idea of what Ulysses does or could do. And this was published in Leningrad and in Moscow in this translation by Zhytomyrsky. Again, writers like Alyosha would have access to this and would kind of encounter Joyce. And, you know, in a lot of memoirs from the time, including a number of Alyosha or involving Alyosha in some way, all these debates were springing up about what Joyce was bringing to literature in general and perhaps Russian literature. Debates about, you know, is this stream of consciousness actually new or is this something Tolstoy had done before? And there's this, to me, this brilliant line in one of these memoirs where Alyosha is kind of critiquing this fascination with Joyce, even though, as I, you know, propose and show, he was engaging with Joyce very directly. He mentions how, you know, in telegraph offices, these clerks have been writing without punctuation for quite a long while. So Joyce's innovation isn't quite that impressive. And then, you know, throughout the rest of the 20s and into the early 30s, as I mentioned, various things were getting published. The Dubliners in translation, more Ulysses fragments in 29, even some of his poetry, Joyce's poetry in 1932. This is the early kind of encounter with Joyce.
That's really interesting to me, because I'm thinking about the contrast between writers and the immigration, as you mentioned, with Nabokov and then Shishkin, and those, you know, who are not, and I think, I guess, who are engaging with some of the big themes. And so this is one of the questions that I want to ask you about your book. It seems one of your big arguments is about choosing a literary father rather than a biological father. And you write about this, and I'm thinking of Nabokov's The Gift, where this is such a theme in relation to, say, tradition and the individual talent, right? Mm-hmm. So what is your argument about paternity? I think this is a really fascinating way of doing intertextuality, and intertextuality is plural, as I read your book. What's your argument about fatherhood?
Yeah, this is really the kind of main thread of the book. You know, there are different themes and different ways that these writers have been responding to Joyce. And on the one hand, I'm emphasizing that there's no kind of single Russian monolithic Joyce. They were really responding to him in different ways based on their circumstances, where they were writing from, when they were writing from, that sort of thing. But this engagement with the idea of paternity and lineage is really what brings them all together. And this is really rooted in episode 9 of Ulysses, to kind of get technical for a moment here. In this part of Ulysses, Joyce, through Stephen Dedalus, lays out this Shakespeare theory, which, as you said, is it's kind of it's a two-parter. On the one hand, you're supposed to, the creative individualist author is supposed to cut out the biological father and sort of supplant him with a literary forefather. So in Joyce and Stephen's case, it's a matter of kind of following in Shakespeare's footsteps and electing a literary forefather as your model instead of, you know, an often disappointing and real biological father. And then along with that, what he's arguing is that this, you know, quote unquote, great artist will also create lasting art and in that sense become a father to himself, herself, their self, right? If you can transform how the world views you through what you leave it, the play Hamlet, the novel Ulysses, etc., then you become a father to yourself and you kind of conceive of the world's version of you. And in doing both of those things, your father, son, and Joyce would add, there's like the ghost and kind of the holy ghost involved as well, the sort of metaphysical and metaphoric and artistic thing that is your work, your novel, for instance. And I think all of these writers, another reason why I selected all of them is that they're all really concerned with, even obsessed with literary paternity, literary lineage, history in general. And they all are responding to this theme in different ways, again, depending on their circumstances and what they're after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by which authors choose Joyce. And I remember the story about Nabokov and how he had once proposed a translation of Ulysses. And it, as you say, it came to naught. Were there particular writers that you encountered who made Joyce into their modernist, like the moderate modernist, ignoring, say, Eliot and Wolfe and Pound? That's the first part of my question. And then the second part is the whole idea of Joyce being a high and inaccessible modernist, right? And mm-hmm. and that Ulysses is a book that everybody talks about that nobody really has read. So how did you deal with that in conceiving of your elective affinities and choices of, say, fathers and sons?
Yeah, I think I would say all of the writers I selected, this is maybe answering both questions at once in a way. All of them speak about Joyce in their texts in some way, either explicitly or implicitly, and then certainly outside of their texts in interviews and memoirs, etc. And that to me was important to find kind of evidence or data in a way, not just in the text, but outside of it, and to see maybe if there are contradictions between those or what their statements outside of their novels could bring to a discussion of how they're responding to Joyce. And I think, again, all five of the writers I focus on do see Joyce as this kind of monumental figure in modernism, European modernism, and then as a kind of influence or invading force, welcome or not, into Russian literature.
That's interesting.
And I think they all, these five and certainly others also elect him for that reason of literary paternity, sort of suggesting that they're as good or they can be as good. There's a kind of currency, right, to associate your name with Joyce and figures like him. So that was also an appeal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what is the coding, let's say, of Joyce as a Western writer, or maybe even as an Irish writer? I guess that topic is maybe less explored by Russian writers who take upon his themes. I guess my way of asking this is for you to talk about maybe some of the works of Joyce, like Finnegan's Wake, not just Ulysses, but Dubliners and Portrait of the Artist and so forth, and some of his poetry. How did they select a particular Joyce? Because, you know, there isn't one right monolithic James Joyce. There are all these different themes and images in addition to stream of consciousness. So how did you deal with that, especially with your later writers like Beethoven and Sokolov and eventually Shishkin?
Yeah, I think that was an important aspect of the book that I always had in mind. You know, for writers like Alyosha, starting at the beginning, he, you know, would have had less of a Joyce to access. And then for all of them, it really came back to Ulysses as the primary novel for, I don't know, maybe obvious reasons, as this classic modernist text and something that everyone at least talks about, even if they haven't read all of it. But yeah, moving forward, one of the things that was most curious to me was the kind of development in a stylistic influence. You know, we don't see a whole lot of that early on with writers like Alyosha or even Nabokov, you know, famously calls and parodies Finnegan's Wake is kind of trash or not anything worth pursuing, kind of dead end, just folkloric nonsense. But then writers like Sokolov and Shishkin, certainly, who had the benefit of time and kind of seeing what an experiment like Finnegan's Wake and the more experimental parts of Ulysses can produce. I think they were able to integrate that into their art more successfully or more willingly. In Sokolov's A School for Fools, there's certainly the stream of consciousness, for lack of a better term, and I kind of engage with this in the book. And the same thing in Shishkin's Maiden Hair, kind of developing the stream of consciousness into what I call this collective stream of consciousness, and also the kind of collage aspect of the novel, where he's copying bits just like Joyce did,
right.
from other texts and other writers and other utterances and discourses. They kind of saw this benefit of what Joyce accomplished in his later work in Finnegan's Wake, in a way that the older writers couldn't. Yeah, and I'll just add here, in terms of his coding as an Irish writer, I think for some of these writers and some of the ones I spoke to for the conclusion, when I posed this question of, you know, parallels between Ireland and Russia, for the most part, it wasn't something that was on their minds, and they weren't, engaging with Joyce in that way, in some cases because they just don't know about Irish history well enough to comment on it anyway. But for a writer like Shishkin, as I describe in chapter 5, Joyce really represents Western art, and kind of the banned, suppressed Western art that wasn't accessible so widely in the Soviet Union after the 30s. And he has this great interview in which he says that he wants to merge the West's love of man, which is embodied for, or excuse me, love of the word, which is embodied for him in Joyce, with Russia's love of man, embodied for him in Nikolai Gogol. So I see it, and I think Shishkin, you know, more or less explicitly makes this claim, that for him, Joyce and the art and perspective that Joyce represents is a way to reintegrate Russian literature into or onto the world stage, to bring it back into this broader landscape.
Do you think that the writers that you've interviewed, and I wonder if you might say a few words about the gender aspect of this too, and, mm-hmm. and maybe the generational thing. You know, I mean, you've got some really important writers, Ksenia Buksha, for instance, or Ilya Kukulin, Anna Glazova. I mean, they're talking a lot about when they first discovered Joyce. Marina Stepanova, I think, is another one. And for many of them, it's curious to me because they discovered Joyce as a teenager. I know I discovered Joyce as a teenager. I think I was 13 or 14 when I read Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. Could you talk about that aspect? Because I see, you know, in your book that with this choice of five writers, you're paying very close attention to the problem of generations, you know, Atsi Idiete and so forth. But mm-hmm. many of the writers that you end up interviewing in a fascinating way toward the end, Dmitry Bykov, are born, let's say, in the 60s or 70s, or maybe even in the 80s. Could you say, I mean, I guess there are a lot of questions rolled into this, but I'm interested in this otkritie, the sort of discovery of Joyce and when it happens and how it happens. So what were some of the patterns that you learned and then began to assemble into these chapters?
You know, for the conclusion, I wanted to speak to contemporary readers of Joyce and writers, critics, and so on. And you know, one thing that struck me was the predominance of male writers here. You mentioned Ksenia Buksha, Anna Glazova, there's Marina Stepanova and a couple others. But for the most part, these are male writers who responded to my call for interviews or when I reached out to them. So it was, in short, kind of harder for me to get female writers on the record to respond to Joyce. And I'm not sure whether I have a good explanation for that. I mean, I think, you know, Joyce is, I don't know, prototypically cliched, coded again, I guess, to go back to that term, as a male writer that appeals to these male interests. But there's still so much more universal interests and themes in his book. But for a lot of, again, some of the writers that I reached out to who didn't participate in these interviews, they just didn't see him as a major influence. One, for instance, Galina Rymbu, it's really exciting and terrific, right? Feminist poet, young of the young generation, you know, explicitly told me that these sorts of male writers like Joyce just didn't have much of an impact on her. But for others, as you noted, certainly Buksha and Glazova and some of these other writers of all different kinds, right? There's a good mix. They're not just kind of experimental writers like Joyce. They encountered him in their youth. A couple at least sort of described him as a writer that they read when they were sick, like they were sick at home and they, you know, picked up Joyce. And then Stepanova in particular talks about the kind of like feverishness that came over her after she read Portrait of an Artist and the description of hell in there. And it's kind of like physical effect. That was something that came up a few times in these interviews, like the kind of dramatic physical effect that Joyce can have on you, and the kind of dizzying quality of his art. And then Alexander Ilinin too talks about Joyce as kind of air you want to breathe and to exist in, sort of calming and comfortable, I guess. It's still challenging, certainly, but kind of you feel at home with Joyce if you kind of belong to this tradition or see yourself as part of this tradition. Some of the themes or the patterns I noticed in reading their works and talking to some of them for the end too.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Yeah. Do you see in, especially say in Shishkin Maiden Hair, which you talk about, and I think a really interesting chapter 5, mm-hmm. not only Joycean themes, but say Joycean characters. I know that I remember reading this interview that one of my mentors, Emily Tall, did with the translator, Victor Hinkies, and I think was one of the first translators of Joyce. And Hinkies said something like, it was really difficult to translate Molly's soliloquy, not having the ability to feel her, like to feel her experiences. I think about this as a gendered thing. I'm wondering if you might talk about who you would regard in some of these fine novels as Joycean characters, or at least characters who are maybe parodying or re-experiencing Joycean themes.
Yeah. And I mean, first of all, I'll just note, since you mentioned Emily Tall, that's so great that you knew her and you had this, or you know her. I've been trying to track her down, but I was never able to. So you'll have to tell me later if I can reach out to her. As far as Joycean characters. Yeah. Since you mentioned Shishkin and Maiden Hair, I don't know if I thought about it in these terms, but certainly the translator interpreter figure, the protagonist in that novel, is a kind of Joycean figure in the wanderings that he does, right? He's not feeling exactly at home anywhere, and he's displaced in these various ways in immigration. So in that sense, I do think Shishkin himself kind of sees this affinity with Joyce, as an emigre writer, as someone existing outside of, you know, his homeland. And the interpreter is a kind of mm-hmm. avatar that certainly. And what I saw were in these 5 novels, lots of kind of inversions of Joycean characters or Joycean models. The primary one certainly is the young artist who's searching for a father or trying to replace a father. This is in mm-hmm. all of the books.
Stephen Dedalus.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. From Envy to The Gift, Nabokov's Gift, in Pushkin House by Andrei Bitov, the main character, Lyova, he develops what the narrator calls the grandfather hypothesis. and makes these connections between these men who have returned back from the camps, from Stalin's camps, his grandfather and a family friend, whom he just didn't know exactly for a while, as potential father figures. And he's making these claims that this is actually his father instead of his biological one. And at the same time, he's obsessed with Pushkin and literary heritage as well. So all these concerns that Stephen has are replayed in these Russian novels and these Russian pages, but inverted again because of the circumstances. Here, Bitov understands fully well that he's coming to Joyce belatedly, and has to respond to him in a way unlike, say, Alyosha or Nabokov, these early modernist writers who could read Joyce when he was first appearing and first coming out.
Yeah, and what about the postmodernist? So I've got to ask this, you know, where does he fit in the world of Sorokin? I mean, where does he fit even, let's say, in the world of right-wing postmodernists, whom you mentioned a little bit, Prilepin? Have they bothered? I mean, I guess, you know, engaging with Ulysses is one question. You can imagine who has read Ulysses and who hasn't. But since there's now, you know, a kind of almost standard postmodernist canon for Russian writing since say the late 80s or maybe 90s, is Joyce passé in that universe? Or do you still find people, since you experience this directly in the Moscow reading group, Kruzhok, a circle who are, is really, you know, like engaging with the episodes of Ulysses and with his body of work?
Yes and no. it's this mix as always. For the kind of more experimental writers, you know, I've reached out to Lev Rubinstein and Sorokin as well, actually, and I didn't include Sorokin's statement in the book, but both he, you know, the conceptualist writers, the Moscow conceptualists, Rubinstein and Sorokin both basically said that he was kind of interest in their youth, but they moved on quickly from him. And just wasn't much of an influence. So I didn't get much from them, though I did include this little section, the kind of anti-Joycians or voices.
Anti-Joycians,
they at least present a different perspective than many of the other ones I include in that section of the book. For kind of right-wing postmodernist or contemporary writers, I just didn't come across a whole lot. But that's a good question, something else to dig into. Certainly for some of these writers, Buksha to some extent, and a few of the others that I spoke to, there's absolutely this question of whether Joyce is passé, whether he's bringing anything new to the table at this point, or whether it's just being kind of recycled and everything has just been integrated into Russian literature already. So there's not much of a point in holding him up so highly. But to me, this was really one of the most fascinating parts and kind of symmetries in this research, that the debates that are happening now regarding Joyce were very similar to what was happening at the beginning of the century, or, you know, in the 20s, at least 20s and 30s. The debates about Joyce being a novel writer, or whether he's worth integrating into Russian literature in some way, whether he's a influence worth pursuing, or is he just kind of getting in the way and not bringing anything worthwhile to the table. This is what I tried to emphasize at the end, that this is still an ongoing story. There's still more Joyce history to investigate.
I love your chapter on Shishkin, Jose, I have to say, and I'm thinking about this essay that Shishkin wrote, which you mentioned, called More Than Joyce, right? In 2018, which is, I think, you know, a seminal in the sense that he, you know, has published it in German. He was in exile, and he's positioning, you know, this classic Irish modernist writer within Russian culture as almost like a revival. And I wonder if you might say something, not just summarizing Shishkin or what, you know, his preferred stylistics are, but how do you read this as a call in some ways to return and also go, you know, into a future beyond the metaphysics of paternity, as you say, and the metaphysics as defined of aesthetically choosing a heritage and choosing a father. I see this as really promising, you know, throughout your book in that you're covering a lot of literary criticism, you know, from Harold Bloom to Julia Kristeva and beyond. But I wonder if you might offer your own ideas about this renovation of tradition, for lack of a better phrase, and what this might mean for your own writing and your own interests in poetics.
It's an excellent question and certainly a big one. I think you're absolutely right that what Shishkin proposes and kind of what I'm seeing too is a move away from the kind of top-down hierarchical move to something that's more, equal and a loving level playing field that all of the forefathers and all of the children, foremothers as well, kind of exist in the same space, and you can quote and cite from others in these new exciting ways or revised ways, I suppose. And like Shishkin says, I think this, you can't return to the modernism of Joyce, of course, but what he represents and what he managed to accomplish, nonetheless, is going to be reinterpreted over and over and over. And there's so many more discoveries to be made because of what he was able to do. I'm in this.
So, Jose, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you wrap up the story in your conclusion. So you have a really interesting section in which you lead off with a quote from Joyce where you talk about history as a nightmare. And there's a famous quote from Ulysses where James Joyce says it seems history is to blame. How did you end up writing your conclusion? And then ultimately, I would ask, how did you choose a mode for writing this book, if it's tragedy or comedy or irony, in re-engaging with this tradition?
Sure. I think in hindsight, or as I reflect and hold the book in my hands finally, the conclusion is really one of the things that I'm most excited about. As you mentioned, it's divided up into five parts, which I call acts. And one of those parts is what we've been talking about, these interviews with contemporary writers. It's a sort of mini oral history. And then the other parts sort of lay out different aspects of how this all fits together, the story of Joyce. There I engage with Hayden White and different modes of approaching history or literary history. And like you said, I think, I can say I was conscious about this, or intentional about it. For the five chapters of the book, the kind of main part, I really wanted to tell this sort of chronological story starting in the 20s and moving to the early 2000s, basically ending with Shishkin's Maiden Hair, in tracing this development as something that had different eras with these representative writers that kind of speak to concerns and issues at each of these sort of pit stops along the way, from Alyosha's ambivalence and tension in the Soviet Union, the early Soviet Union, to the emigre, to the post Stalin belated kind of freaking out about what you're supposed to do when you've missed out on so much history, Sokolov, who's sort of outside of history and outside of politics, or he wants to be, and then Shishkin's reintegration with the world, with world culture, in this moment when, you know, all of a sudden you're competing with your predecessors on the market in a very literal way, right? If you're starting to publish in the early 90s, all of a sudden books by Nabokov, by Joyce, are appearing for the first time or in a very long time, and your books are selling alongside those. So there's a strange set of circumstances. And then what I describe in the conclusion, in the third part of the conclusion leading up to the interviews, is that, you know, again, there are different ways to tell the story. And what I wanted to emphasize with the oral history and the arrangement there and having these voices speak to each other is, again, a different mode of approach of literary history. And here, seeing these parallels and seeing these connections between the different voices, I think speaks to the kind of spontaneity and chance that's always present in Joyce and in literary history, when these things just are in the air or they come up or someone introduces Joyce to someone else. There's a different approach in organizing the material in that way. And there I wanted to have it kind of more open-ended and definitely not, I don't know, not tragic in White's way or in a kind of traditional way, and definitely not ironic. I think, I don't know, for better or worse, I'm more romantic about this and more idealistic in some ways in seeing the benefit or the joy in Joyce and what this literature can bring, and these universal unifiers that he's writing about in his texts. In the conclusion, to my mind anyways, kind of emphasizing that and the open-endedness of his poetics and of Joycean studies too.
Yeah, I think that's a really good place for me to ask about some of the literary criticism that you found, and maybe if you could recommend a few books to our listeners. I'm thinking that your mode is definitely not ironic, but that there's a lot of potential for what you know I would call an interactive novel, and in many ways I think rereading Joyce and celebrating Bloomsday, you know, every June 16th becomes a way to do this, not just in stream of consciousness in that formal kind of way or formalist kind of way, but as a celebration of literature and maybe as a celebration of world literature, which I think is where a lot of the authors you cover would love to place Joyce, just in a not national canon but Weltliteratur, in what, you know, sort of Goethe imagined as a world literary space. So maybe you could recommend a few, maybe like other works or other sort of literary scholars and in their works who have influenced you.
Sure. I think a couple of things that come to mind that I've read or encountered recently. One is Molly Thomasy Blazing's Snapshots of the Soul, which is looking at photography and photographic tropes in Russian poetry throughout the 20th century. I think in a lot of ways it's similar to my book in terms of the chronology and in terms of these sort of key case studies. So I've really appreciated it both for the similarities and for providing a different lens. And I don't know, I'll just mention that I definitely want to look more at the poetic influence, Joyce's poetic influence. So that's an extension I need to get to. And then one book that I'm almost done with now and have been quite enjoying, another semi-recent one, is Fabrizio Fenghi's, hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly, It Will Be Fun and Terrifying, which is a brilliant title. Yeah. And looking at...
It's a great book. I interviewed him.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wonderful book.
Exactly, yeah. Nationalism and Protest in Post-Soviet Russia. So, you know, far from what I'm looking at, but it's a great book in the sense that it, well, for a lot of reasons, but one thing that I really like is the direct interaction that the author had with a number of his subjects and this integration, you know, and like my book, having these interviews and oral history, that's something that I've been thinking a lot about how we can change and shift literary criticism or kind of write about these things in different ways. And have different structures for our books. So anyway, that's a couple things that I've appreciated recently.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And I'm really happy that you mentioned Fabrizio's work. It's another one that I really hope people will read. Could you talk finally, you know, since we're running out of time here on New Books, maybe about your current interests? I know, in addition to all of this, and this is your first book, you are thinking about or working on a project involving contemporary Russian prison literature. And how are you going to do that?
Definitely. So one not so recent book, but one that I mentioned earlier is James Joyce and the Russians by Neil Cornwell. So if my book is looking at the literary response, this is something that I would recommend to readers who are interested in the history and the critical response of Joyce in Soviet Russia and in emigration. I think his book is important to mention here. But as for more recent books that I've enjoyed and have found productive in some way, two come to mind. One was just recently released as well, is Molly Thomasy Blazing's Snapshots of the Soul, which looks at photography and photographic tropes in Russian poetry of the 20th and into the 21st centuries. And in some ways, this book is similar to mine in terms of taking a kind of case study approach, looking at this chronology of this theme or this idea in Russian literature. So I, you know, appreciated it for its affinities, but it's also covering this really fascinating topic with so many extensions in Russian culture and different manifestations. A second book that I have recently, that I'm very close to finishing at the moment is Fabrizio Fenghi's It Will Be Fun and Terrifying on National.
It's a great book. Yeah.
Yeah.
I interviewed him.
Oh, right. on nationalism and protest in post-Soviet Russia. And one of the things that I particularly like here in his book is how he incorporated interviews and kind of anthropological approach, right, into this cultural study of nationalism and protest in post-Soviet Russia. That's something, you know, that I had in mind in crafting the oral history in my book, and then I'm thinking about more in general about how we can change, what new things we can do in literary criticism, how we can structure our books differently, or what else we can incorporate, whether it's, you know, more interviews or more direct engagement with the material, or thinking about our writing in these new exciting ways.
Well, it's exactly what I'm trying to do with you in interviewing you. I love doing oral history, and I love the autobiographical dimension of experiencing the writer's world. And really, in many ways, this is a psychological thing, trying to figure out your interior monologue, if for lack of a better term, and how what's interior becomes externalized in the course of writing. And it's one of the reasons why I was drawn to Joyce in the first place. I tried very hard to get through Ulysses, I will now confess. but I read it backwards. I really did. I read it backwards from Molly's soliloquy, and finally read the whole thing. But it took me a long time. I had read the other works. I love Dubliners and definitely Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. I'm really intrigued in Joyceana by the work on Nora. You know, I have to confess, we haven't mentioned Nora Barnacle at all, but, in thinking about what Nora thought James should do and what he should be, and beyond the world of paternity, thinking about their children and that sort of thing. I think that there's so much more actually to explore, and I'm interested in biography and in that particular sort of dimension of their lives. I don't know if there was a biography of choice that you read when you were reading.
Definitely. Yeah. The Ellman biography is the place to go to, the Richard Ellman biography. if I can just mention two quick things that came to mind too. So one of the people that I spoke with was Sergei Solovyov, and he is kind of thinking along the same way you are about Joyce's personal life. He ran across Joyce's naughty letters to Nora, where he, professes his love in pretty graphic terms. They really resonated with him, the kind of openness that Joyce expressed. And he translated them in a kind of poetic style. I think that both the myth and the reality of Joyce and the person that Joyce was, or, how he presented himself, appealed to a number of these Russian writers. Absolutely, the biographical with the literary. And then the second thing, since you brought it up, I have this pet theory that we're all kind of writing about ourselves in our research. Not, a particularly original theory, but something that I do believe, at least in my case. I didn't realize it for a while, but I came to this topic too, because I grew up without my father. My parents divorced when I was days old. I never knew him. So this quest, I guess, to find a literary father and, an interrogation of what fatherhood means, or can be, I think really appealed to me in a way that I didn't recognize for a while. And yet here's a book about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say it. And I was drawn to your book for this reason too. I also had an absent father, who was gone at 10 months. So, it is a quest, and it's really, intensely emotional and hard and personal. And I can imagine this was a really hard book to write. I'm not sure I could do it. and for that reason, I really just want to congratulate you, Jose, on doing this on your first book. And now on that note, we're completely out of time. So we've been speaking here on New Books Network and New Books in Russian and Eurasian Studies and New Books Literature with author Jose Vergara, who is a Joyce scholar and has written a book called All Future Plunges to the Past, James Joyce in Russian Literature. This is just out with Cornell University Press in 2021. And Jose, again, I really want to thank you for your time and congratulate you on your wonderful book.
Thank you so much, Stephen. This was fun.
And I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here on the podcast with New Books Network. Until next time.